And we are back with an all new episode of Keep It. I'm Ira Madison III.
I'm Louis Fertel. And before we introduce our tremendous and esteemed guest, I just want to say that on Thursday, within 24 hours, three things occurred. Cate Blanchett's new movie Tar came out. Charlie Puth released a new album. And the season of The Mole came out, the long-awaited revival of The Mole. And I think October 6th has to be official Keep It Day now. From here on out in the future. That's like all of our chakras all together.
Was that an October surprise?
Yeah, right. Not that we're Libras or whatever October 6th is, but yeah.
Tara is fantastic, by the way. I saw it last night.
We'll need to have a whole conversation about that in the future.
Yeah, we will. But like, Cate Blanchett, like, call me a tar baby, okay? So.
Oh my God. Let me get the Brer Rabbit on speed dial, baby.
Charlie Puth's album is very good.
I disagree, but I appreciate that he tried.
Yeah. Ooh, we'll get into that in a future episode too. And The Mole is very good, but we'll talk about that this week because our guest, not just our guest, but our guest host this week is the esteemed, iconic, gorgeous winner of Big Brother, Taylor Hale.
That's fucking right. Hi. I mean, I didn't hear a lie. So, like, you know, who am I to deny the thing? The truth. Hi, guys.
You were such an amazing Big Brother contestant. And also, I just want to say, like, your arc on the show from, like, seemingly doomed contestant on Big Brother to somebody who was accelerating to victory eventually is so mind-boggling. And I just thank you for being on the show, because I have never been so thrilled for a contestant in God years and years.
It's been, I mean, you guys saw it was an absolute whirlwind. I went through hell in that house, and then yeah, you're right, it was just a full steam speed to the end. And even in the end, I'm sure I give you guys a little bit of a curveball with part one and two of the HOH comps. I was really in and out and up and down the whole time, but to walk out as the winningest winner ever of the show feels pretty damn good. Laughing all
yes,
the way
America's
now.
Favorite player.
That's
okay,
right.
I want you to know that constantly online was the conversation: can someone win Big Brother and America's Favorite Player? And we all kept being like, "No, you can't. No one's just ever been popular enough to have it happen."
Surprise. No, and even then, you know, the only season that I really like watched in real time was last year with the cookout. And I remember just wanting Tiffany to win before she shot herself in the foot. I wanted Tiffany to win so badly. And I thought, okay, like, she could win AFP and the whole show. It could happen. But, you know, that was my destiny, not hers.
I mean, we'll obviously get into this in our reality TV discussion, but I have to ask, like, you as a contestant I felt was so unusual for the show, and that literally not once during a confessional did I ever feel like you were screaming at us, or that you took like the producer bait to like really like exclaim all of your observations and paranoias to us. When you were auditioning for the show, did you feel like, I just imagine you were surrounded by, you know, auditioners who were, you know, loud and animated and doing their best get the producers to look at me thing, and you to me just casually sort of draw attention. Did you, I mean, like, how did you stand out basically during the auditions?
I think I'm so dry that's enough to stand out in its own right. Like, even when I thought I was really giving a lot in the DR, I watched the episodes and I'm like, Taylor, where is the inflection? Like, what is going on here, baby? Like, give me more. But it's just, it's my face, it's my voice. I could control it, but that's why I'm not an actor. But you know, it's just, I am who I am. That's why I went into the house as myself. And I'm not a DR yeller. That's not my style. Could you imagine me? Oh my God, I have to win this veto to secure my safety. No, I'm like, like, these hosts are putting me on the block again. Of course I want this veto. Like, chop, chop. I got to go prep mentally. Oh my God.
No, I hope this sets a precedent for the future, because truly I need eventually like a hearing aid after I'm done with a season
People
of Big Brother.
Shout so much. And like, even when you were loud during your speech, you know, before you won, I assume that's just because, you know, like, it's live TV, you're like, you want everyone to hear you outside, because it's not just piped in the Julie's ear, but like, people are constantly shouting on that show. And I've rewatched like a bunch of the winner speeches too. And it's like, they're shouting even more. And it's like, you're saying it so quickly. It's like, you're running out of time. And it's like, it was just nice to not have my decibels blown.
Right. By yeah. you. I hope this sets a precedent. Yes.
I hope so too. Anything to protect your ears.
The
That's a real keep it
work.
Right there. Keep it to yourself.
Well, we have so much to ask you about Big Brother, but also we're going to talk about the show in general and our favorite reality TV shit, like with you, because, you know, you're here with us all episode. We're also going to get into some questions about you, too, in general, as Taylor the Icon. And then we're going to talk about some of our favorite, like, culture shit, you know, like our movies, our TVs, like the things that you can't stop watching. Lewis and I last week were talking about something that jumped this conversation off when we were talking about movies we've seen, like, way too many times, whether or not they're even our favorite movie or whether or not, like, they're perfect as a film. We were talking about, you know, you were like, you've seen Clue too many times. And I was like, I've seen Heather too many times, and I have critiques of it now. So we want to know what you've seen too many times, what you love, what we all share. And we will
give it
back. Oh, please do. We know.
Oh, my God. The ride begins. I'm so sorry.
We will be right back with more Keep It. How could we have Taylor on and not talk about some reality TV? So let's chat a bit about her time on Big Brother, our favorite reality TV moments, and the new version of The Mole, which Lewis and I are currently obsessed with. So, Taylor, first things first, the Big Brother house. My first question is, what was it like listening to Renaissance for the first time?
Yes. Oh my God. And what a moment.
There was some like rumor or something online that like it's in an iPod shuffle or something. So it's not in the same order. Is that true? And like, what songs were you like reacting to the most the first time? Cause we're just listening to you. We're just watching you like with headphones on and we're seeing you mouth along with things and going, bitch, yes. And I'm like, what song was it?
In her ears.
I should reiterate quickly that the clip we're talking about is when Taylor was HOH, head of household, 1 week. You get to choose the music you listen to on headphones in Big Brother. And she got to listen to the new Beyonce album, which is pretty unprecedented that you would get a new album, you know, during your time in the house. So,
well, first, the single Break My Soul was released literally the week before we got into the house, and the date was released. So I was like, I know it's coming out, it's public in some capacity. I know there's a loophole where if I'm HOH, like, you gotta give it to me. But the first song, I'm pulling up the album right now. Okay, so the first song that played was Summer Renaissance, but there's a button on the shuffle where you can actually make an iPod shuffle so that an album is in order. So I thought I put the album on that note. So the first song I heard was Summer Renaissance, and I thought that was the first song of the album. And then it went to I'm That Girl and played everything in order. So I was like, okay, I listened to everything in order. It's all perfect. No, someone probably just listened to that song last, and then it kicked off in order from there. But I mean, you hear the sample, Donna Summer sample, and I was just like I felt like my soul was levitating when I hear that song. Like, the it literally rises. I don't know music that well, like, I don't know music terms, but it's just like the cadence, it rises and levitates, and I was like, I have been lifted. Like, Beyonce, you have levitated me, thank you. And I think, like, winning HOH at that point, for those who aren't familiar with the show, head of household, you get power, you nominate people to evict. And when I won head of household that week, it was very crucial because it secured my spot in the finale, in the final three. And it was like literally the weight of the game, which was hell, just lifted off of me. And I had this decision to make on who my allies were, who I thought I could beat and take to the end. I'm like, I am that girl. Like, this bitch has got nothing on me. Like, this is made for me. But if we're going to get into the songs that really resonated with me, it was Heated. Because these bitches were pissing me off.
I knew it.
Oh, my God. That was the one. That was the theme song, okay? I was in the tub. I was in the bed. I was snatching the headphones off of somebody else. And I was like, give me that song. Let me listen to this.
Truly, one more thing about the head of household room. One of my pet peeves as a viewer is how everyone decides that the head of household room is a communal room once someone wins.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, no, but I won this.
Get out.
Yeah.
But it's just, that's why I was so not in the room the first week. I was like, no, that's their space, but you need to make that a communal room when you are playing the game. Like, you need to bust up in there. And people, if they're too weak to set boundaries, that's on them. But you need to get out there and be friends with the HOH. Use that shower. Sleep in the bed. Like, we get very uncomfortably close whether you're actually allies or not in the house. And you have to for the sake of the game. But yeah, I thought it was weird. I'm an only child. I don't share shit. But here I am. Like, yeah, come cuddle in my bed and use my shower. Use my shower. I'm a black girl. You know what I look like sharing a shower with? What the hell?
We bring him up all the time on Keep It, but one of my best friends is Andy, who won Big Brother 15. I believe that's correct. And the first time I met him was the day after he won Big Brother, and we were sitting literally at his hotel in LA, and in the middle of our conversation, I don't know what we were talking about, but he suddenly jolted. Like, he was like, oh my God, for a minute I thought I still had a microphone on me. And I was wondering, what are the aftershocks like after you leave the house? Like, do you still feel like pangs of having been there?
Oh, do I? So there's obviously people will say like, oh, like I feel like I still have my mic on me. I have felt a little bit more like my phone has taken the place of that. So I don't get the pang of like, oh, I need to wake up and go change my battery. I don't have that in me anymore. And I really didn't leaving the house. But the weird thing is that when I have conversation, this is just how I approach the game. That's why people think I'm a saint, which I beg to differ. But when I was having conversations in the house, I was very aware that the cameras were on. So instead of having a one-on-one conversation, which, you know, I would engage, my approach was more, I need this person to keep talking and spewing their bullshit because I know everybody else is watching and I know I'm not a crazy bitch. So you keep talking and I will just give reactions, but not lead the conversation. And I've noticed that carry over into my real life. Like, I'm talking to people as if there are still cameras and everybody else can see what's going on. So it's almost like an office moment. I'm almost like, y'all see this shit? But then I realize, oh no, Mateo, you have to actually engage now. Like, it's a different thing. I think that's the big one for me. There's no other like really odd things. I sometimes still feel like I hear the sound calls that happen. It's like, please go to the diary room. Please go to the storage room. I miss that a little bit because that was just fun to mess with. But outside of that, I think it's really the way that I converse with people.
Well, I would say this has got to be partly why you were such a compelling player, because you know that the camera eats first. You're like serving that conversation to everybody watching.
Exactly. It's look, you zoom on in to what this dummy is saying, and I will just look at you afterwards and be like, y'all got that? Okay. All right. You know what's in my head because I know what's in your head. And they just said what they really said out loud. Okay, we're good.
The reason why I think that America has been obsessed with Big Brother for so long, and the reason why we have, you know, it's like, it's insane because we love games as Americans, obviously. Like, you love playing games with friends, and it's like, it's wild to watch people play this big game where, you know, you're all stuck in a house and you're all competing to win a cash prize. But it's, what about the game, watching it at home, particularly like the cookout season, which was like an iconic season as well, to then being in the house, what did you not get from watching it on TV that you were like, oh, I wasn't prepared for this?
The fact that you are literally living your own life. Like, people say, I'm going to go in as this type of competitor, or I'm going to have this strategy. You're legitimately just a human being surveilled. So whatever strategy or gameplays or personas you want to take on, it's going to fade very quickly because that's 90 days that you have to keep that up. It's just not going to happen. 90 days with dwindling people who get to see more your bullshit as you go. It's like, you don't realize that, yes, there is a game, but you're still a human being playing the game. So you're not prepared for actually getting in there and living your second by second life, conversing with other people, communicating with other people, and having that interpreted as game. You're just not going to be as prepared as you can be, because like, we all wake up, we all take a shower, we all go to the bathroom. These are mundane things that ties into the game, but it's just, you have to navigate it differently. It's a mind fuck, because it's like, oh wait, I'm still a person, but all of America is watching me, but all I'm doing is like filing my nails. and people are wondering what's in my head. You just don't realize how much that messes with your brain when you're inside the house.
Oof. Oh, that's it's an interesting insight. By being yourself, you're acting in a way.
Exactly. Like, where's my SAG-AFTRA card? Like, this is, it's very bizarre.
Now I feel that's coming.
It's wild that you don't get SAG being on Big Brother.
Well, and on any reality show, you know, there's no union for reality TV personalities, and maybe that'll change.
Yeah. But even that of the feeling like you're acting, I feel like people forget that you who aren't super fans that the feeds for the show are on all the time. So it's not just you're living your life and you're like, CBS is going to pick interesting moments and put them on camera for people to watch. No, there are people at home like me laying on my couch, eating dinner, watching you either having a
laying
conversation
on the couch
by the
eating
pool,
dinner.
Right. Or laying on the couch eating dinner, eating your Lay's chips, or truly sometimes you just tune in and people like aren't having combos and they're just sort of like sitting around looking at each other, just sort of nodding like you would with your friends if you were hanging out. But like, this is you being broadcast to millions of people literally doing nothing. And that, I think, is still surreal to me, tuning in and watching people like that, because it's so voyeuristic, you know? It's so Rear Window.
And I signed up for it enthusiastically. What type of psychopath am I? But that's exactly it. I'm sitting around, I'm eating chips. I go to the pool in heels and lay in the hammock and I say absolutely nothing. I look at the camera. I toy with the camera. I say, you little sickos, you little freaks. You keep staring at me all day. What do you want? Like, and people are watching and engaging with it at home. It's a very, very bizarre reality because, you know, imagine if you had cameras set up in every corner of your room, if the windows in your house were not real windows, there are people manned cameras behind those windows that are moving to watch you. And you just completely forget to some extent that there are people surveilling you, not just the ones behind the cameras in the house, but the people who tap a few buttons in their own homes and bring me into the home. Frankly, I said that you guys came into my home and I just said, okay, enjoy, see what goes down.
Now, you talk about how the crazy feeling of being surveilled, but I think something that's weird about Big Brother is once you leave the house, I'm sure your impressions of certain people you stayed with dramatically change. Like you have this new glimpse of, you know, the people you didn't really get to know or what their real plan was when you were around them in the house. Is there anybody specifically where after watching the show now you think about them in a totally different way than when you were around them in the house?
Well, I had a pretty unique experience. So.
Right. Yes.
You know, I think it's kind of funny because people want to say, oh, it was just game. But the way that people reacted and spoke about me and treated me was very personal. So I don't think I really have the liberty of seeing people in a different light. All I have is the concept of forgiveness, the concept of people coming to me to apologize. I can't look at people differently. I can only accept things as they are. So, you know, I can respect gameplay. I can respect when the after party came back into the house and Monty immediately going to the after party and flipping on Big Brochella people in that alliance. I can respect that. That doesn't hurt me. What hurts me is the microaggressions that turn into macroaggressions, the sexism, the racism, the slut shaming, all of those things that happen from day zero going into the house. So the only opportunity I have to look at people differently is in how they present themselves. And it's funny because, you know, at the house I've been in now, I was in the Heather Master bedroom and people would still come up to the room and knock on the door and be like, hey, can I have a one-on-one? Like, I won the game. Like, this isn't the HOH room. We can call the HOH. We can call it the fridge again. So yeah. And people would plead their case. And there are people who were doing the work in the house before they walked out the door to make amends. And I respect that a lot more than people who now know that I've won America's Favorite Player and the whole game and they're trying to make amends now. So seeing people differently it's a different experience for me than other people, other seasons.
They really treated you like it was impossible for you to win America's Favorite Player at the beginning of that game. I mean,
yes.
I mean, the idea that you won that, I mean, that has to be the ultimate slap in the face to like the first seven people who left that house.
Absolutely dumbfounded, and I love it.
That's honestly one of my favorite concepts of reality TV, to be honest. It is the perception that you have, and then the perception that the players have, and then the perception that America has. And obviously there's editing that goes into shows like Survivor that Lewis and I love, and other kinds of reality shows. But Big Brother, when people are watching the feeds, like, constantly each season, you will have people be like, wow, I wonder if people hate this person, or they'll be like, America definitely hates this person the same way we do. And it's weird that people are so rarely like get even a kernel of it. One reason I love Big Brother Canada is that the players seem to be a little bit more self-aware of like who Canada will like and won't like, but also when they do live shows, they pipe in and let people boo or cheer people, especially when they're winning competitions. So, I remember one of my favorite moments in Big Brother Canada 5. It was a character, Netta, came back. Half the cast was returning people, half was new people. And Netta was a fan favorite. But she was very egotistical this season and going up against another fan favorite, Ika. And when Ika convinced Cindy to put Netta on the block during a double eviction, you could hear the audience cheering when Netta was put up. So Netta knew that the audience wasn't on her side. But then also, that flipped the script for other players in the game turning against Ika, because they knew that Canada liked her, and they were like, well, now we got to get this bitch out of the house.
Immediately. You know, it's interesting. One of my best friends was in the audience, oh, bless his heart, for Kyle's eviction. And, you know,
did they tell people to be quiet?
They said no booing. They said no booing. They said you may not boo. You must clap. And I get it, but it would be really interesting because, you know, before the show even starts, you can hear the audience getting pumped up and everything. So when we would hear the clapping, we get really excited. We would stand by the door and be like, oh, "There's people out there, and they're cheering." We don't think they're cheering for us, but they're cheering. So it was really fun, but it would be really interesting to hear, like, oh, who's getting booed? Who's getting cheered? The most exciting one was Michael going out the door and hearing just the wild cheers. He deserved them. Yeah, I love that guy.
I loved Michael. And it's so, like, it's funny because, like, I was rooting for you since the beginning. I'm Issa Rae. I'm always rooting for everybody black. But
didn't look good for me. I get it.
But I was also like, I was also so excited for Michael to win the game too, because he was giving you a different gay player than you'd seen on Big Brother before, and he was a competition beast. And I was like, the unfortunate part is just like on Survivor 2, it's like the competition beasts always go out in that moment when they don't win, because then someone is like, if you I don't get rid of them, they're winning. Yeah,
which would have happened. It would have happened, and he got to final three like we wanted to. He would have taken Brittany to the end. We all know that. So I had to make sure I planted those seeds to get one of my favorite people in the house out. Sorry.
He also, I thought the way he played the game, like, you could tell he came into that house with the intention to play exactly that way, and it was really working out for him. He was like a really smart player. So for it to turn on its head is also just why we love Big Brother also. So I hope he knows he gave us the full Big Brother experience. So. Love him. No, wait. Obviously, you won Big Brother, so you are, in fact, a perfect match for this show. But before you ever auditioned for this, did you ever think you would be on other reality shows? Did you ever think, oh, well, I'm definitely a Survivor person, or I'm definitely, I don't know what other shows are out
there.
Do you
see my face? Do you see my face? Do you see all the makeup on my face? Look at this hair.
What about this? Sleeping in Survivor? No sand.
Right. Ooh. Survivor? That's the reason why I didn't go to Dire Fest. My God. I'm a VIP, okay? So I was actually recruited to go on to The Bachelor. And so two seasons in a row, they were heavily recruiting me. There's another podcast called Game of Roses, and they were actually trying to coach me to get into the show. So they were trying to like build an archetype for me and tell me how to handle different situations for The Bachelor. And then I was reached out to about The Amazing Race, actually. And I said, well, I
which you will be on in the future. So let's just put that out there right now. Yes.
Yeah.
I was contacted about TAR, that's what we call it, The Amazing Race. And I was like, well, one, never seen it. Two, I don't want to ruin any friendships right now, but I did watch The Cookout last season. So what about Big Brother? And then it just went full speed ahead. Like, I am on Big Brother now. And that's all it was. So I ghosted everybody from The Bachelor. And, you know, my coach at the time was even saying, like, you could be the next Bachelorette. I was like, that looks like trauma in hell. No, thank you. And then I went through trauma in hell in the Big Brother house, but I won. So it's worth it.
Wait, was it ever, were you ever like compelled, like, yeah, The Bachelor could work out for me? Like, was there anything attractive about it? Because it seems like people were like, we've simply got to get you on that show.
Oh, no, there really were people that were like, this has to happen. You could be the next Bachelorette. We see it for you. And I was like, I mean, I like the idea of reality TV, but there's just, I can't fake the funk. And the whole concept of The Bachelor, Bachelorette is, you don't acknowledge that it is a game. Like, you don't acknowledge that there are crucial things you have to do to get to the end. Big Brother is all game. It's so open out there. And there's no question about being here for the right reasons. You could be there for the wrong reasons. That could be an amazing strategy. Whereas if someone breathed the wrong way in the Bachelor franchise and mentioned Instagram in any capacity, it's, get her out of here. She's supposed to be an influencer and they're not here for love. You got to go right now. Like, it's just, it's a byproduct of being on reality TV now. And that's what was kind of cool about Big Brother. We talked very openly about our lives potentially changing, and not only the money changing things, but just being on the show and the things that we want to do and gain and help each other from here. So, you know, that was probably one of the cooler things. I just felt a lot freer and less constrained. It was a longer game, but you could speak more openly.
I actually want to piggyback on an old question that Lewis asked too, you know, about being surprised about people in the game. Was there actually anyone who, like, because, like, you went through hell, and we know you went through hell on the show. Was there anyone who, you know, like, maybe wasn't, like, outwardly, like, evil to you or something, but, like, was there anything that you've watched back that you were, like, actually, like, shocked that, like, oh, this person was actually, like, a pleasant person. I just didn't realize it in the house.
And, you know, I will say what surprised me, because Nicole and I really hit it off from the moment that she got in the backyard on move-in night. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is going to be someone, we're going to take over the whole game together. And I was very pleasantly surprised when she was first presented with, you know, Taylor's got to go. She's evil. She's this, she's that. And she was one of the first few people to really push back and be like, I don't think so. That's not really lining up for me, because that's the person that I and the relationship that I assumed that we had. So it felt good to see that, because, I mean, you all saw it. It felt like a very drastic and sudden shift to Taylor is evil. She is fat shaming people. She's a beauty queen. She's all the microaggressions in the world. She's got to go. Obviously, I was disappointed in her by the shift in Nicole, but, you know, she and I did the work in the house to remedy that relationship, and we're in a really good place now. And Amira was a little, she's good at the game. And she did say some tough things about me, but, you know, she and I should have worked together. We could have worked together. And I think that if I just didn't end up so far on the opposite side of her, then it would have been a really amazing thing to have her in my corner. So those two girls, I was pleasantly surprised that they were not as vindictive from the very beginning as I thought they were.
Who are the reality TV veterans that loom largest in your mind? The people who you think, like, oh, this makes me want to be a part of this genre. Ira and I talk about this all the time. I mean, like, for me, the show Project Runway was so important because it was one of the first shows where there wasn't just one the gay guy. There would be eight of them, you know? And, like, and also, like, not just the one, like, Latin guy or, you know, black guy, you know, like, they needed actual interesting voices and people with stories in order to make that show good. And so all these people who would normally be just one person on a reality show, like, you know, the Real World once upon a time, actually got to go out and be interesting. Who are the people that you kind of care about in reality TV?
Oh my God. I mean, look, I would be lying if I didn't say that America's Next Top Model changed my life. Like,
oh, fuck yes. Great immediate answer. Yes.
I mean, come on. Like, that is reality TV for me. And, you know, there are other things. I think you all know I have a pageant background. I was with Michigan USA. I think growing up also watching pageants, sometimes I feel like pageants were the original reality TV. So there's an argument for variety shows, but, like, the pageant girl, the pageant itself, that was appointment television, that was live television. You're watching someone compete to be an overnight sensation. So I did not grow up as a pageant girl or a pageant fan, but when I caught it, that was so exciting to me. Something else I think is reality TV is the Victoria's Secret fashion show. And yes, issues, qualms, all those things, but seeing these models on display, seeing these models so in their element, that felt like a fantasy, but it felt like reality TV to me. So the Victoria's Secret fashion show, America's Next Top Model, all the different women that were on America's Next Top Model, and seeing kind of the archetypes of what reality TV is through ANTM. You got the black bitch, you had the soft girl, you had the funky girl, the quirky girl, all these different types of women navigating a really toxic environment, not just because of the sake of modeling and fashion and reality TV, but because of being a model. What is it like to navigate that area? What's it like to compete directly with other women who want what you want and to be judged in front of other people by people who are highly respected? Seeing those stakes was really interesting to me, and that was kind of freeing to me, even though the confines of that show were a little rickety. It was an interesting show, but growing up and watching that, like, that was my everything.
I love that you brought up the Top Model, because I feel like there's still more to unearth about Top Model, like actually as a competition show. I feel like right now, you know, people, Gen Z, like who wasn't around, like are rediscovering the show like online. And a lot of the conversation is Tyra was crazy. And like she said a lot of like, you know, like awful stuff that wouldn't fly now. But I'm like, right, not enough is being paid to, you know, the actual competition element of America's Top Model. And like that was a really well crafted reality show that blended the concept of a model, you know, with competition. I mean, like when I'm still going like on like either like it's a date or like you're meeting new friends or like going somewhere in the city, like I still like use the phrase go sees.
Yes, always. You and I are the same. I literally, like, if I meet up with someone, I'm like, oh, I have a go see. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Don't worry about it. You're not in my industry. You wouldn't understand.
And the fact that the show, because it had actual luminaries like Andre Leon Talley, you know, like Miss J, you know, like, mm-hmm. Because you had real people working in the industry, they were giving that, like, you know, sort of like Simon Cowell thing of like being a bitch or like being brutally honest, but it was also, this is the shit you hear. Like, if you can't survive this in the show, ratchet it up, you're definitely not going to survive as a model, you know?
At all. And the thing is, I credit that show so much with my comfort with trans and non-binary people. I mean, seeing Miss J was such a catalyst to me, like, Miss J is who Miss J is, and I don't care. As long as you're fabulous and you're a cool person who's good to be around, who am I to question who you are? I think, like, reality TV has been the thing that has exposed me into opening up my mind. So that's why I get really frustrated when people talk about reality TV as if it's trashy, or men that I have dated talk about reality TV as if it's something that's not interesting or boring or frivolous. Sports are reality TV. Let's be honest. It's reality TV for men, traditionally, whatever you want to say. So why not give credit to these things that are actually opening and expanding our minds? That's just what reality TV is. I'm inviting these people into my home. I'm entering their home to understand who these people are. And it gives me a better understanding of who the rest of the world is. That's all it is. So no, when people start to write off reality TV, that's when I just want to like take a backhand and be like, shut up. You don't get it.
No, I mean, like, that's ultimately kind of how I feel about the Kardashians, which is how many TV shows are about a family of women? I mean, it's like there's a reason there aren't, you know, they're taken unseriously, whatever. So just to have people, whatever, the richest people alive, like that just doesn't exist elsewhere. So it always feels like the shame begins with, I don't want to see three women talking to each other, to me.
No, it does. And, you know, I will go up and down about the Kardashians every day. Like, they have their problematic moments, but I think there is real value in seeing women, very strong, powerful women operating and showing that unapologetically to the world. You know, then there's a back half of that conversation, but you know.
Well, Lewis, maybe you should be watching WWE's Total Divas, okay?
Wow. Get smacked around a little bit.
Shockingly, this is the first time this has come up. So you can submit that request in writing. Yeah.
We used to do ads for Total Divas.
Oh, once upon a time, yes.
I recall. Long time listener, first time caller.
But I mean, that is also reality TV, wrestling, you know, like men watch that. I grew up watching that. You know, it's soap opera. It's everything. It's all the fun that you love in reality TV. Before we wrap up our reality TV segment, have you heard of or seen The Mole before, Taylor? And have you seen any of the
homework.
Have you even been able to watch any? You did. You watched it.
I watched it an hour ago. Okay, I cannot disappoint them. Oh my God. So I watched the first episode and a little bit of the second episode of The Mole. It's giving like The Challenge meets. There was, I think, on E! Or Bravo, there was like a spy show recently on there. You guys know what I'm talking about?
Imposters?
No. It was a reality show. First of all, okay. Special shout out to Imposters season one. Incredible. But no,
Imposters there was, gave what it needed to give. Okay.
It gave everything.
Bravo needs to bring back scripted TV.
Please and thank you. But no, there was another reality show on one of Ear Bravo, and it's literally people pretending to be spies and operating in that aspect. And like the judges were people who worked for CSI and whatever. So it's a little bit of that mixed with The Challenge. It's interesting. I've never been a person that's been all in for The Challenge MTV. Like, it's just not been my style of competition reality show. I'm a E! Bravo, Bachelor, that type of girl.
So you're gonna say no when they ask you to be on The Challenge USA? You're like, I don't wanna be sliding through mud.
I mean, my nails, they're so expensive to get them done. I don't know. No. I've heard the Big Brother people dominate the challenge though, because we know how to use like the social game to our advantage.
They dominate the regular challenge. Challenge USA was a spinoff that was started on Paramount Plus, and it really involved a lot of CBS personalities.
Yeah, only CBS personalities.
Very disappointed in the Challenge USA, by the way, because the Big Brother people won, flopped, because Alyssa and Derek were salty about the cookout, and so they turned on a whole Big Brother alliance, and it was like Tiffany was out, and then Xavier, Kylan, like they got all of them out, and then they got cut too because the Survivor people all stuck together.
Yeah, no shit.
Because Survivor players know that you got to get rid of grudges to win a game. So they got what they deserve. Also, it was the first challenge where like the two winners won because everyone else in the final quit because it was too hard. It was just a poorly produced finale. Yeah.
I've never even heard of that happening. That's really
Sarah
strange.
Sarah from Survivor won by default. And you know what we think about her. Sarah the cop.
let me keep my mouth shut because all I do is Survivor people now. It's all CBS people in my world right now. So I'm gonna keep it nice. I'm going to an escape room with DX tonight, so I'm gonna have some words.
Oh, okay. Listen, DX is also on The Amazing Race right now.
So, yes, he is.
Yeah. So shout out to him.
By the way, that should be a reality show, you navigating an escape room. That I just want to say, period.
True.
We'll live stream it just for you.
I want to say about The Mole quickly. So it's a show that Ira and I are particularly excited to come back. But it's a weird show because if you're not familiar with it at home, Anderson Cooper used to host it years ago. It's one player is posing as a contestant among group of contestants, and he ends up and it turns out that they're a mole in the group. They're working to keep money from the pot, keep the players from winning challenges. And the weird thing is, as a regular player in the game, one of your only lines of defense is to act like the mole so that other people think you're the mole. And the way people are eliminated is they take a quiz about the mole's identity every week, and whoever gets the least questions correct is kicked off the show. So it's an advantage if you get people to suspect you and you're a regular contestant, because then they're likelier to leave the game. But because of that, everybody has a reason to sabotage challenges, so that's never really a clue to you. Mm-hmm. So what you're really searching for is who has advanced knowledge of the games and of the challenges, because that's the actual difference between the mole and the other contestants. And that's harder to look for. You know, it's harder to find. You're basically discovering who's the worst actor in the group or who's acting in the group. You know?
And I would also say that, like, the one thing that, like, tends to help people, and I've been rewatching some of the old seasons, and what really seems to help on this season is – You can't go all in on who you think the mole is, because then
you have
to get all the questions
up.
Wrong. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You've got to be like, I'm answering for several people. And I love that this one has, just like the old game, it has a QR code that you can do at the end of each episode and do the quiz yourself. And I thought I knew who the mole was. I did not.
Oh, really?
It
tells you if you get questions wrong. Yeah. It tells it tells you when you suck. And basically, like, I was thinking maybe Jacob in the beginning.
Yeah.
Because, but then, once the other blonde woman started, really suspecting him, I'm like, oh, no, it's definitely not him. And, part of me is, it'd be wild if Joy was the mole, because her losing $25,000 for their pot was truly wild behavior.
I mean, I've never seen somebody tank a group of people like that before.
So I'm like, if you're the mole, congrats, girl. But also, if you're not the mole, why are you playing this game?
Right. There's something about the editing of this show too, where if there are contestants who are on to who the mole is, they're not going to let you know. So you're doing a lot of guessing who people really are suspecting, because they're not going to tell that directly to camera if they're exactly on to who the person is.
Mm-hmm. But
that's
something else.
A
really fun
update. Very Big Brother-y. That's very Big Brother. Mm. There are a lot of people who were, just when you're interacting with producers, and Joseph is here with me and he was talking about it all the time. He would not show his cards to the producers all the time, because he doesn't want there to be a misdirect or some sort of influencing, which they actually don't do in Big Brother house. But it's interesting. Mm-hmm. You want to keep your cards very close to the chest when you're on a show like that.
Mm-hmm. Not our King Joseph hiding off camera. Our King Joseph is here.
We love King Joseph. King Joseph is asleep in the other room. King needs his rest.
I loved you shaming him for not having TSA pre-check, by the way. Guys, you can go to an Office Depot and solve that this afternoon.
Easily. But no, he wants to sleep. He doesn't have pre-check. He doesn't have global entry. He doesn't have clear.
It's giving bum.
I won't say it. It's giving bum. Thank you. I was going to say it's giving poverty. I'm sorry. Maybe let me take care of it. I got $800K. Let me spoil you, please. Sorry.
$800K. Yeah, that is a significant bump from $750. I'm glad we rounded that up.
Yeah. I will also say that,
thanks, America.
In terms of TSA pre-check, though, there was a period where it was impossible to get an appointment. I feel like pre-pandemic, it was impossible to get an appointment. And it was a lot of, you had to be flying back from an international trip and then do a meeting. And so that's why I don't have mine yet, but I do have clear, which, by the way, sometimes works out better, because the pre-check line has been long at JFK or LAX. And when you go, there is truly never anybody in the clear line, ever.
Yeah.
I'm a late person. When I get to the airport, I get to clear and I am to my gate in less than 5 minutes. And so
seriously, going through security is a breeze. It's the most I've ever done it with clear is 7 minutes. And even then I'm what's going on here? Come on, get me there.
Yeah. You know why you're always slow going behind clear? Because somehow there are still first time flyers every time you go to the airport, because I do not understand how I am in the line ready to put my stuff on the conveyor belt, and there are still people who are do I take my shoes off? Do I take my belt off? Oh, sorry, my phone. Do I do that? I'm like, have you never flown before?
Clearly.
What we call kettles, Mon Pa kettle. Yes.
All right, when we are back, we have plenty more Taylor. And we're going to get into our favorite cultural moments.
Save big on your landscaping project now at Menards. Whether you're installing a patio or a new retaining wall, Menards has the blocks you need to get the job done right. We carry the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Stop in and get our 12-inch smooth patio block on sale now. Save big on concrete landscape blocks at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
For those of you playing Keep It Bingo at home, you know there are some movies we can't go a single episode without referencing, or TV shows. So it's really time to dive into our favorite movies and shows and things that we've just seen way too many times. Side note, I have to shout out, I got this insane message from a listener who told me that I mentioned Buffy too many times and I need to stop doing it because it's not good. And I want to say, fuck you.
That's right.
To this listener who also was drunk and mentioned that they were drunk in the message, texting me like an ex. I was like, leave the Drake behavior out of my DMs. And also referred to the show as Buddy, not Buffy.
I mean, well, that was grim. Now it became by the way, they didn't come for me for the Madonna thing. Madonna comes for three times as much. And by the way, she's coming up in Keep It Today, so get ready.
Oh, okay. Excited.
And they also, I think I know what that keep is going to be, too. And by the way, they also mentioned they watched the first season of Buffy and it was awful. And if you've actually listened to me talk about Buffy over the 5 years we've done this show, everyone knows that the first season sucks. So, sorry. It's 12 episodes. Go to season 2. Anyway, movies. Taylor.
Also, oh my God, 5 years. 5 years of me being a Keep It stan. Wow. I miss it. I'm here. Mama, we made it.
I'm sorry. I truly, every time I experience someone too being like, I've listened to the beginning, I'm always like, how are you doing this?
Yeah, right. How are
you
doing?
How are you doing this? How are you doing this? Are you sick of this? I'm not. Give me all of it. You guys are my friends in my heads. I'm an only child. It's fine. I'm totally well adjusted. Doing great, guys.
Okay, Taylor, what have you seen too many goddamn times?
Oh, Mean Girls. Are you kidding me?
I've also seen that too many times. Yeah. Yeah.
I've seen Mean Girls too many times. I used to bootleg watch it, you know, those like janky places you could watch a movie and like download or whatever and get a bug on your laptop. I didn't care. I was in middle school and every night, because I thought that this is how high school would be. And I thought that middle school was my training grounds for high school. I would go to one of those jank websites and I just left it up in a tab after a while. And I would watch that movie every night before going to bed. So I would understand clicks. I would understand people. I bought the book the movie was inspired by. I was like, I am going to be a social psychologist. And I'm going to dominate high school and middle school. And
been prepping for Big Brother since middle school, basically.
Yeah, it feels like it. I've been forced to, basically.
Who's your favorite character in Mean Girls? Because this is actually a good litmus test. I'm curious.
Oh, Kevin DePoor. Are you kidding me? Also, Kevin DePoor is my favorite character, but also because I have a very deep kinship with the black girl in the very first scene of the movie. We have a new student. She's from Africa. I'm from Michigan. I said, that's me. She's me. It's giving Detroiter. It's giving attempted white ally. I see you, please.
Lewis, who's your fave?
I think my favorite, well, at the time, definitely, was Amy Poehler as Regina George's mom, because that was also one of the last times she really was silly as fuck, because that character was Daffy. And also, just like cocking off one hip, the thing that's most realistic about that performance is she's filming the talent show in the audience and can't help but dance along. That's like, there's like an urge to be a star is coming out of that character in a serious way. It's so very funny.
It's perfection with her hard nipples.
Yes, the hard nipples, right. Mm-hmm.
I think I still love Gretchen so much. Gretchen, just like I like Lacey Chabert, you know? I mean, icon from Party of Five, but like in here, she really does a great performance. Like, you can see it building throughout the entire movie, like the anger. And when she finally blows up with that Caesar monologue, I was like, this is your best work, sis. And we haven't seen anything like it since from her.
We haven't. No, I think we don't talk about Lacey Chabert enough, because I mean, what an icon, truly amazing actress and everything she's done. But also, you're right.
Daddy Daycare. Come on.
But like, her performance over the course of that movie is beautiful. I think Mean Girls is what showed me acting. And look, I was a theater kid, blah, 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 little geek, little nerd. But Mean Girls is what showed me that there's value in telling women's stories. There's value in communicating women's anger, understanding women's anger. And there's value in acting stupid. Like, seeing, God, you know, I know her, Gretchen, Regina, what's the last one's name?
Karen,
thank you. Seeing someone play Karen and seeing how difficult it is to be stupid, to act stupid for an entirety of a movie. Like, that is what made me value comedy. That's what made me value acting. It's easy to play the hard role, the difficult role, the thing you have to change yourself for. Doing stupid and being good at it and bringing comedy to that, that was just, it was life-changing for me.
Women's stories matter. They just matter.
As hashtag women's lives matter.
I love that that's picking up, by the way. I mean, how many times has she said some version of that, by the way? It's like Reese Witherspoon's job. She's like the music man going from town to town telling us that women's stories matter.
It was great that she said that on the same day it was announced that Hello Sunshine, her company, is making an adaptation of Goldilocks and the Three Bears, where Goldilocks will be a powerful female protagonist.
It's not really a story of personal triumph, Goldilocks. She's
really up in people's shit. Okay,
she barged into a house. Yeah, this is a thief.
Goldilocks is white privilege, just like defined. You open up the book and Goldilocks, white privilege. Goldilocks, are you kidding me? Just sleeping in these bears' beds. Get out of here with the three different types of porridge. Avocado toast down the block, bitch.
That's actually Teal,
you're
the
doing just
with
fine
America.
Here. I'm really thrilled.
And that's America's on America's problem. Favorite player.
Yeah. Let's start banning Goldilocks in schools, and then we'll fix the white woman problem in America.
Yeah, I am pro book banning. I don't know if you guys knew this about me.
Oh, glad to hear it. A movie I weirdly have seen too many times, and I think it's a credit to the movie because it's actually very short, is Aladdin. I don't know that it was a VHS we had, or it just came out all the time, but it was an interesting movie for me to see a lot as a little kid because it's the most pop cultural Disney movie, I think. You know, when you have the genie in that movie who is doing things like dropping Johnny Carson and or Ed Sullivan impressions, you know, and really everything he does like has some old TV or movie reference or something. So that really became kind of foundational for me. And also, I just can't explain it. I like every character in that movie. Like, everybody's kind of could be their own movie. And I think eventually they spun off and they were. And we had the return of Jafar and all that. But
I mean,
like,
look, Jafar can return me to his bed anytime he wants. Listen.
Please. Yeah.
And thank you.
Taylor, unfortunately, I have
Am
to
I
tell
wrong?
You, I think Jafar is gay.
No wonder he serves. The brows are too good. I should have known. The brows are too good. It's always a tell.
But even like the Sultan is like such a great dizzy bitch, you know, you know, like dumb but conscientious. I don't know. It's like the characters all had like a resting sarcasm too, like Jasmine funnier than she needed to be, et cetera, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a really, when you think about the Disney movies that were on VHS, I feel like we've all seen them so many fucking times, especially you and I, our age, Lewis, because like, my mom would get those, and then when your mom is busy and has to work or doesn't want to be bothered by you, it's put this Disney VHS in, and you're totally enraptured for 2 hours. You know?
Also, there's something about those movies specifically where the packaging, like the white thick, you couldn't just own one. They looked great together on a shelf. You know what I mean? So if you had Aladdin, then you were getting The Hunchback of Notre Dame, then you were getting Hercules, etc.
The books of my lifetime. I was checking myself out because I realized I'm serving Jasmine Realness today. Just the pony.
You
the
are.
Really
yes.
Giving. She's giving. But there's also, I realized, and maybe this is so far beyond the truth, but remember those VHSs were numbered, like the actual cassettes had numbers on them.
Yes.
And you know, a lot of those cassettes, because they're printed over and over, you get high hundreds, whatever. I watched Mary Poppins so many times on that VHS. And I remember the number being 25 on that cassette. So I would walk around or on the VHS tape. So I'd walk around and tell everybody, I have the 25th print of the VHS of Mary Poppins. This is iconic. It's mine, and I'm going to keep it forever. It's going to be worth a lot of money. And, you know, I may or may not have pulled out all the tape on it and had to buy a new one. And that is my movie. It is my movie. That and 365 on Netflix. Are we familiar?
No. Hold on. Wait, wait.
The movie.
Okay, no, wait. No, I have not seen 365. Wait, is that the, like, sexy movie?
Yes, it is. Sexy. Just take a Y off. It's a sex movie. That's just basically what it is. There is no plot. It's in three different languages. It is truly the worst movie you are ever going to watch in your life. but it's the best movie you'll ever watch in your life. I think we need to be more pro stupid movies that mean absolutely nothing. And that is my genre.
That is a firm advertisement. I will be visiting the 365.
Yep. Yeah.
Which is not the 355. Two. Yes.
You know I love the 355.
No, hold on. I'm actually getting all those movies that are exactly that kind of cast mixed up. Is that Jessica Chastain?
Yes. 355 is you know, one that's like my new salt.
Yes.
And if we're talking about movies that I've seen too many times, you know, I'm not going to mention Salt because... I think I've like exhausted the fact that I've seen Salt too many times in this show. I've talked about Heathers. I've talked about, honestly, I think I've talked about A Nightmare on Elm Street so many times on this too.
Yeah, we've had our horror moments, yeah.
Yeah, if I'm thinking of like a movie that it is maybe surprising that I've watched so many times, it is something like Disturbing Behavior.
Interesting. I mean, I love that era of movie where you just end up, you might, I feel like that's a movie you would see on TV or something.
Yeah, Katie Holmes, James Marsden. It's basically Stepford Wives, but with kids.
Oh, that's promising.
Yeah, you know, it is, it's Don't
Which
Worry,
I pitched
Darling.
To Nickelodeon. Yeah.
To Nickelodeon or it's... Nick Cannon?
Yeah. Oh, my God, so funny.
It's like Don't Worry, Darling, basically. You know, it's like it's bad kids are at the school and then they start being replaced by kids who are like upstanding. So, you know.
Were you guys ever huge fans of Airplane?
No.
No.
I liked Airplane, but not... I liked it, and I would see it when it was on TV, but it wasn't like a constant rewatch for me.
Because that movie is so like lush with jokes that you actually had a reason to watch it again and again, like the sheer jokes per minute. Like you wanted to be able to retain all those eventually or recite them. And also that movie is so – nobody laughs in that movie. So it's something that retains being funny for a long time because the characters are playing the zaniness so seriously that you don't get, I feel like you get sick of broad comedies a little bit easier. Like the joke has already hit a couple of times for you. I just want to say quickly, my favorite joke in Airplane, or most underrated joke in Airplane, is when there's a woman freaking out on the plane that she's going to die. And she goes, "We're going to die. And I've never even gotten married." And then this other woman comes by and she goes, "I'm really worried. We're going to die, but at least I have a husband." the cuntiest line ever. So funny. I can't believe straight men wrote that movie and wrote that line specifically.
Are you positive about that? That's the real question. Can we confirm the straight men wrote that?
One of my co-writers at Kimmel, her dad is one of the writers of the movie. So I ask about it all the time, really annoyingly.
Okay. I will say, we wrap this up, I'm just going to say one movie that I will be watching forever, Do Revenge on Netflix.
Oh yeah,
it is.
Yes,
every
I watched it the other day.
Oh my god!
First of all, Sarah Michelle Gellar popping up in it was chef's kiss. I'm happy for her renaissance. And
I see what you did there.
Yes, and Camila from Riverdale, Camila Mendez, and it's a Jen Robinson film.
Yes, of Someone Great and Thor: Love and Thunder. Yes,
yeah,
former Keep It guest.
Yeah, so that's a very fun movie that I really do enjoy. You know what I will going back to your joke, though, about a woman maybe writing that joke in Airplane? You know what is so funny to me? I was telling a friend, we were talking about Carrie Fisher for some reason, because, I don't know, we're faggots and we're talking about Carrie Fisher. But
that is the answer.
I was like saying that they didn't know about her extensive history of doing like script punch-ups. And I was talking about how like modern, I was explaining to a friend the concept of most comedy films that come out, studios just hire writers to do punch-ups on them.
Right.
And and so like the person who's credited with it, you will just assume that they did those jokes, but like anybody could have done those jokes. And it's usually someone who's just recently had a successful comedy or is just known in the industry as being funny. And when you look back on like the movies that like Carrie Fisher did that for, it's like, of course, you go and see a movie and you're like, these jokes are so funny. And then like not knowing that like, oh, those jokes might have been written by Carrie Fisher, you know?
Right. No, it's like, oh, this movie is suddenly extremely acidic. What happened? Oh, Carrie Fisher got a hold of it. Yeah.
Surprise, surprise. Come surprise.
This one scene.
Yeah, right. Wow, you suddenly have the sassiest friend I've ever seen. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, and if we want to speak acidic, I will actually say that probably a movie that's like a comedy in the airplane vein that I've seen so many times is Soap Dish.
Oh, sure, Sally. Again, Whoopi being her hottest.
Yes.
I love a business so Goldberg.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Soap Dish. Obviously, you know,
Kathy Moriarty is so funny in that movie. Problematic role. Funny performance. Yes.
But about the going on of a soap opera. And it's just, I think they've tried to remake it so many times. And it's like, it's really a film that almost sort of like Airplane couldn't really be remade exactly the same way now, mostly just because soap operas aren't as popular and culturally relevant as they were back in the 90s. You know, like back then, like a soap opera was like, if you were on that, you were as famous as George Clooney. You know, people were like chasing you down the street. Everyone knew who Susan Lucci was, you know, Deirdre Hall, you know, like
Taylor Hale on the Bold and the Beautiful soon.
Yes. Okay. Oh. Okay. Brooke Taylor and Ridge. Okay.
I can't tell you when, but you will know when. Soon enough,
my memory of Bold and the Beautiful is for a split second, Lark Voorhees from Saved by the Bell was on it. And I just remember thinking, good for her. I needed her. I just thought she was the funny heart of Saved by the Bell. And so I wanted her to go on to do great things. And that was one of the times she got to do something. Anyway, it still looms large to me.
I can't wait to see you on a soap opera. That'll be iconic. And also, speaking of soap operas, that's going to be my keep it. Anyway, that was a mishmash of movies. What's one other movie, like, to wrap up, like, from your youth that you were like, you love this movie so much as Mean Girls? Like, when you took a break from Mean Girls, what else did you watch?
Well, when I think of youth, I think of, like, young Taylor. And I know we're supposed to be thinking, like, scripted movies, things that I actually loved and played on VHS. Those are all the fucking Disney movies. Like, fine. Okay. Whatever. But for me, it was, God, I'm so lame. Janet Jackson, Live in Hawaii. That was my movie that I played over and over. And yes, I watched the Did You Mind bit as a child. Yes, I knew all the choreography to All For You. Yes, I knew all the choreography for Come On, Get Up. Like, if you want to talk about opening a show, Come On, Get Up, Live in Hawaii, Janet Jackson. That is how you open a concert. That is my movie. It was just constantly on in the background. I know I have these odd non-traditional things of like reality TV and movies, but it was a different experience for me. I lived life a little bit differently through the media that I consumed. And Janet Jackson, as we all know, I'm like, that is my girl. I love her down, and she comes to my post, and I'm still passing out about it. But that concert was so freeing and beautiful and exciting and colorful. It was like an acid trip, but I was a child, so I didn't know what that meant. It was just perfect, absolute perfection.
I love that.
Also, Come On, Get Up, if people don't know, is a track off All For You, and it is a Janet banger. Like, it really should be up there
slaps
with her classics that we hear all of, you know, in CVS's across the country or whatever. Also, just like that album and era in general, like, it really just broadcast like her sunniness, you know.
Yes.
She there's like a full light during that era, you know. Not that I don't love like hard military Janet, but this version was like a nice counterpart.
It was so fun. Mm-hmm. What I say about Janet, like, all phases of her existence are just the path of Black womanhood, and I got to experience what that could be like by understanding her journey. So I love you, Janet.
No, Live in Hawaii is truly like an iconic era of Janet, and I love rewatching that all the time too. There's nothing better, honestly, than like putting on a concert video at the end of the night, and just sort of like vibing to that with friends, because it's music, it's also the visuals, and it's
perfect.
All for You is, we just got the Velvet Rope deluxe edition, which, thank God, because finally I got my favorite Janet song, because you know, Louis, my favorite's been I Get Lonely, but it was really the video version of it, the Teddy Riley remix that has never been available for streaming or like on an album. And now it's finally available for streaming, and I love that. And now I'm listening to that constantly, but I'm ready for a deluxe edition of All For You, because more than just Come On, Get Up, it's like there are so many classic songs on that album that aren't, you know, the ones you hear all the fucking time, like just You Ain't Right, how that opens the album. It's just like, that is Trust to Try. Like, these are just like high octane Janet Jackson songs that you never hear, constantly when people were listening to Janet songs, but these are like bangers that are perfect, like in a club or at the gym or something. It's like I was literally listening to All For You at the gym yesterday.
Also, I mean, shout out to Son of a Gun, where Janet gave a few bars to up-and-coming rapper Carly Simon.
up-and-coming, later to be world-renowned.
Yeah. Wild choice. Literally rapping about clouds in her coffee. Guys, I could not have predicted it, is all I can say.
Also, the phrase, ha-ha, hoo-hoo.
Hoo-hoo.
Thought you'd get the money too.
I do.
She was the pioneer of mumble rap. I'll say it here right now. We'll claim it.
All right, it's on the record now. All right.
All right, when we are back, it is time for our favorite segment of the episode. It's Keep It, and we can't wait to hear Taylor's. And we are back with our favorite segment of the episode, Keep It. Miss Taylor, you go first. You are guest of honor.
I gotta keep it, baby. First of all, the fact that I'm even doing a Keep It is just, this is unbelievable. Fangirling once again, but I'll step out of that because I'm sure your listeners are sick of me. My Keep It. So taking the high road. Fuck the high road. Fuck everybody who has told me, you inspired me because you told me how to be a bigger person. You had so much grace and poise in the Big Brother house. No, I sat there and I let people tell on themselves the whole time. And they were the fools at the end of the game. I didn't take the high road. I let people show themselves as assholes. That's all that is in the key to my Big Brother game. Yes, I played a social game. Yes, I had to manipulate people into understanding that I'm just a normal human being. But taking the high road sounds a lot like, hey, why don't you sit back and take some disrespect? That's not how I live my life. Taking the high road sounds like some absolute bullshit. And I'm sorry, but I am not Michelle Obama. I am not Gandhi. I am no saint. I am a woman who wanted to get $750,000 and also, I don't know, be able to walk out the house like a normal human being without being a villain that they all thought I was. So the high road is for people who are better than me. I am a salty, angry little minx, and I'm ready to be a petty bitch that I've always been. So fuck the high road and anybody who wants me to take it. Y'all can take it for me. I'm ready to live in my petty era.
Well, let's just say, by the way, to tune into Big Brother and to want or enjoy the concept of grace is mental illness. So whoever says that to you should be put the fuck away.
Immediately. Put the jacket on, please.
I mean, listen. First of all, the only high road I want in my life is the 2006 JoJo album, for one.
That's right. And when she was like 11 years old and crooning, yes.
And singing down. Uh-huh.
11 years old talking about that good old and how to touch a girl. I'm like, ma'am,
help.
This is child abuse.
You're still in the Burger King ball pit. You can't be talking about this.
Jeez, it's giving concern.
Yeah.
That honestly is one of my biggest Big Brother complaints lately, to be honest. You know, I loved your season. I loved the cookout season. But when you watch old clips of Big Brother, there was no grace. There was no thinking about how the audience is going to react to you. Like, I love someone who is like, you have a fight with somebody and you're like, bitch, as soon as I win, you're going home. You know,
yes.
Like this, you want people playing the game and to be active. And a lot of the times, Big Brother now just has a lot of people sleeping during the week.
Don't get me. Wow. Okay.
You sleep very well.
Thanks so much.
Yes.
Who else was going to call the bag of Lays? That was my responsibility. No, I do miss that older, I don't like you, fuck you, Big Brother. Like, I miss the Rachel Riley. I miss the Janelle just going around saying, like, you go to hell. You kiss my ass. You eat the darkest region of my asshole. Like, I miss that era of Big Brother, but it's just not the game that I was afforded to play. But now, I don't have to care.
It's also just not a practical... it's not a practical way to play the game. Like, in fact, anymore, it's really stupid. Yeah.
It's, if you want the money, you have to be a lot smarter. And maybe that doesn't always make for great TV. Thank God it did this season. So, you know, AFP game winner, we got it all in the end. And now I can just unleash all the things that I was holding on to. And it's fair and warranted because America saw the truth.
Yeah. I was asked by my friend James to ask, have you seen all the fan cams that people made of you?
I'm obsessed with them. First of all, to all the Beyonce songs. And also, like, I felt like I looked real busted a lot of the times. I'm a pretty bitch. I am so sexy. I love these fan cams. I'm like, no, stop. Oh, no. Keep going. Please. I need more. So, yes, I am watching every single fan cam. I have them saved. I'll watch them next to Joseph. Like, I'm pretty. They're great.
My favorite moment still of the show, aside from Michael running out of the house when he was evicted, was you and Daniel's interaction when he said, because how was that discovering that bat? What was the first time you saw the clip of him saying, you need to stop? And you being like, with the Lays?
With the Lays? It was on Twitter. It was maybe 2 days after finale night. And I'm just going through clips on Twitter. And for me, everything is really positive. I can't say everything the same for everybody else. But all my social media is overwhelmingly positive. So I'm watching the fan cams. And this next video starts playing. And I realize what it is. And I'm like, oh, what does it look like? And that's when I saw it. You need to stop. First of all, I think he's doing a bit. Like, I really think he's just like acting with me. And I was like, oh, with the Lays? Like, oh, you're taking me to final two? I am a bitch. Oh my God. And just with the Lays, now I understand why that is so iconic and cemented into the season and my personality, because that was my best friend. And where is my Balenciaga Lays bag? I'm just curious. I have one yet. It's giving Taylor Hale.
Demna's dealing with a lot right now with Kanye and everything. So, like, I think it'll take him time to get you the bag. But I just want to say, like, that the with the Lays moment was, I actually feel like that was the moment where this game of Big Brother stopped being just for Big Brother fans and really catapulted into being like a water cooler moment, like, culturally, because people started talking about this season of Big Brother who I didn't even know watched Big Brother and probably didn't watch Big Brother, but you had other people and like celebrities and other people like online who, you know, like who comment on culture and things like talking about the show. And I'm truly think it was like that coupled with, you know, like, you know, the abuse you were getting in the house, but it culminating with that moment and just how funny it was unexpectedly. I think that's what really got people talking about this season.
And it makes me happy because, you know, Big Brother is just never something that entered my sphere at all. I only knew about it when there was the racism and season 21, it kind of entered my bubble, but very barely. And then the cookout last season with what they were doing, that's, you know, black. Okay. So those are the only moments where I feel like Big Brother has felt big enough to me in my world where I was so deeply entrenched in other reality TV. But just to know that my dumbass was the one to push this into mainstream pop culture, it feels very, very bizarre because I didn't expect my impact to be this big on the game at all.
It really is a chaotic online discussion, but it really stays in the pocket of the people who are obsessed with the show generally. So when it breaks out, that really is surprising. And it's only happened a few times, I think.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Lewis, what is your keep it this week?
All right. I'm going to do two mini keep its. One, the new Charlie Puth album. Guys, what happened? I was waiting for years for this. I don't know if Taylor's a fan of Charlie Puth, but I've said for years, I loved how he combined the styles of both Hall & Oates and Carly Rae Jepsen. It felt like a sexy douchebag vibe, which I didn't know I would sign on for initially. Like, nothing about this person demographically is what I'm into. Like, I didn't know until about 2020 that men sang. I didn't think that was even legal. And I didn't know that there was an audience for it. But in 2018, when he gave us the album Voice Notes, I was like, this is fucking sexy. This is an album that you want playing when you're in the hot tub with four other guys and you're wondering if it's going to turn into a different type of hot tub party. You know what I'm saying?
My favorite type of hot tub party.
Yes. All right. But this album, I feel like those influences have waned. It's lacking any sort of cool homage, because I know he's obsessed with like old fun dance music. It just feels generic and unfinished. And unfinished to me is the key word with this album, because it feels like a bunch of songs that are aiming for cohesion, but none of them has like the monster hook you want. None of them has the monster sex appeal, the danceability you want. And I know you just did this huge GQ profile on him, which I, by the way, have not read yet. So I'm sure I'll discover five new wonderful horny things about Charlie Puth that you are going to teach me. But so there's that. And then my other keep it is to the fucking internet responding to Madonna making a TikTok where she flicks her wrist after. Okay, I'll explain the TikTok. The concept was there's a text on the screen that says, if I miss this shot, I'm gay. And she throws this pair of panties into a wastebasket, misses, and then turns to the camera and makes a little flick of her wrist to indicate she's gay. Guys, that is very typical Madonna shit. And that does not mean she is a homosexual only. And as, by the way, several sources have now reported, I don't know if it was like Variety, but things at that level are reporting, Madonna, gay person, out in the world making these TikToks. Guys, of course she's had her little dalliances over the years. I've seen the name Ingrid Cazares thrown around online all week now, which is actually a head trip. I'm excited to see it. But she's just somebody who like saying the word gay. I thought it was funny. You can't be shouting down Madonna when she's being coherently funny. This is a rare phenomenon for me.
First of all, I will say that in the 90s, Madonna's music videos were airing on the box and she was licking the box. Okay? Like, she has had... She's had confirmed girlfriends. So it's not new information, her being bi or something or fluid. So I thought that was silly. The Charlie Puth album.
Yeah.
I like it.
I think you interviewed him for that magazine and you're like, I'm going to make myself like it. And I believe me, girl, I know what it's like to write a profile and you want to be on their side. Trust me, I know.
I want you to re-listen to the song Loser, which I think has a great hook. And a great bridge.
I can get into. I can get into a little bit.
I feel
like my absence from society for 82 days is showing right now. Like, I would contribute so much more, but I know nothing about the outside world.
But what's so funny is that...
We accept you as you are, Taylor. Yeah. Yes.
Now, what's so funny, too, is that, like, there are so many random... Like, I mean, like, if you just, like, looked at our episodes from the period from when you went in to when you left, so much shit happened this summer that now sort of feels inconsequential, but... were literally the only things that people could talk about all summer.
Oh, great.
And I'm trying to like even remember any of them, but it's like they go in one brain and they're sort of out the other, because they're like, I mean, like you missed like the whole Don't Worry Darling press tour, for instance.
Right.
Olivia Wilde and Florence
Harry Styles,
the Machine, Harry Styles, like all of this drama. It was just like constantly people. Like, it was behind-the-scenes drama going on with this movie, and then the movie came out, and it's... Some people thought it was fine. I thought it was a mess, but that's, like, come and gone now.
Yeah,
but
it's the totally
way that
in the
encompassed
past.
Us for, like, 3 months.
Oh, literally the entire time I was gone. Look, all I know is Queen died, and Rihanna's doing the Super Bowl, and I'm trying to get a Lay's Super Bowl commercial. So, I think my favorite Big Brother joke is, because apparently the Queen died the same week that Michael got evicted. So someone started saying, we lost two Queens this week.
Long may they reign in hell, you know.
Right. Michael is an angel. He's going to heaven.
Yes, we adore him. Yes, Michael, come on, keep it. You're invited.
All right, my keep it this week, and I actually have two as well. My first brief keep it, a serious one. We've already said plenty of times that we're done talking about Kanye on this show. So I just want people to know that, like, we're not going to be doing it anymore. But I also want people to know that I really sort of, like, hated the rhetoric. And it wasn't just from Sarah Silverman. It was from other people. The rhetoric this week that, like, when he said his anti-Semitic shit and then went on Tucker Carlson, which... Anyway.
Already disqualifying. Yeah,
already, yes, right. Like, you went on Tucker Carlson, baby. I mean, come on.
I miss forgetting about that name.
Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, right? Saying the anti-Semitic stuff that he said, it's awful. And I'm glad that people are speaking up about it, because they should speak up about it. And I said last week in my Keep It, you know, like, the real problem is, like, stop inviting him into the fashion room. Stop, you know, like, producing his albums. Like, stop working with him. That's how you got to take away the oxygen. But there was, like, rhetoric from people like Sarah and other people, like, people weren't speaking up enough about the anti-Semitism. And I'm like, you just should be following more Black people online, because we have been talking about him constantly, from the racism, the misogyny, the, you know, supporting White Lives Matter, white supremacy, supporting Trump. It's just like, at this point, we're exhausted, because I feel like Black people have talked in a void about how dangerous this man is for years, and no one's listened. So if people aren't talking, it's because they're exhausted. But people are talking about it, you just got to go find it. Not me. He's blocked. The name is muted. I'm not hearing about it no more. It's so wild that, like, we started the show in 2018 after, you know, like, his involvement with Trump stuff, and it's just like, it has dominated 5 years of this show.
Right,
and
stagnated in this level of horror. Yeah.
I don't want to do it anymore. I don't want to do it anymore. So we're
solid
done.
Keep it. And also an official Keep It. Let's enshrine it.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, official. Keep it forever.
The second Keep It goes to certain viewers of the NBC soap opera Days of Our Lives, which aired this week, the first ever threesome on a soap opera.
That's right. Yeah, giving us the content we want.
So the characters Chanel and Ellie are two women in a relationship, and then they just had a threesome with this guy, Alex Kyriakos, on the show. And let me tell you, first of all, it was tastefully done. There was saxophone music playing, you know. It was like, it wasn't giving Cinemax, okay?
But it was giving Oxygen Softcore. Yes. Oxygen Network, I just want to say. Yeah.
And it, because the one thing about the show is, like, it's transferred to Peacock, but it filmed so far in advance, and the Peacock switch happened recently, that this was going to air on NBC before the switch happened anyway. So it wasn't like the show switched to Peacock and then all of a sudden got racy.
Porny, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It is wild to be a fan of soap operas in this day and age, and to have seen murder, blackmail, multiple rapes, demonic possession, like people's closets going into hell, zombies, anything, and to find a threesome too much. It's insane to me to see tweets from people being like, is this a thing that normal people do?
Yes, I mean, don't tell on yourself like that.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Baby girl, I know you're actually doing the same damn thing. You're just mad you're seeing the reflection on the TV. Please.
Okay, Mary Beth. All right. I feel like I first learned about threesomes from Jerry Springer.
Right.
That makes sense to me.
Also, it's barely controversial. It's the sex you're familiar with having, but there's one more person. I mean, what?
Crazy.
It's not that much of an upheaval. Yeah.
And it makes me feel like it's mostly just like bigoted, because it's two women kissing each other within the threesome who were in a relationship. Mm-hmm. And it's not
That's
just
out of
a
control.
Guy having sex with two like random floozies, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, honestly, get over it. It's wild to me that just like soap operas have always been seen as sexually provocative, you know, like in the 70s and 80s. It's like, it was like the Love in the Afternoon was the thing on Time magazine, where it was like, there's so much sex happening on soap operas, and it's like, what are we watching? Think about the kids, you know, and now that it's actually reflecting fuck them kids. Now that it's actually reflecting like the present, it's sexually provocative again to, you know, the certain set of older viewers who are watching the show. But
speaking of enshrining, by the way, I'm excited that Mary Beth is the name you chose. I don't know. There's something about that that really hit the nail on the head for me. It's giving Catholicism. It's giving the suburbs of Chicago. Yeah.
Mary Beth and her sister, Lori, who she's at. Because Lori's probably had a threesome, and Mary Beth heard about it, and she said, don't bring that up in my Christian home.
That's right.
Exactly. Yes. And let's call her Lori Jane, but she just goes by Lo.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, It's Christian Girl Autumn in this podcast. Yeah.
Look, the fits are fire. Okay. Fits are fire. Put some respect on that girl's name.
Also, one last thing about Days of Our Lives. I hope it gets its money back being on Peacock, gets a bigger budget. Because one thing I miss about older soaps is that they would play current pop songs instead of like this royalty-free music. Because there's a clip that was circulating of Marlena and John from Days of Our Lives when they were like about to have their affair, and they see each other in a pub, and Anita Baker's Caught Up in the Rapture plays, and like they're just like horny for each other in this pub, imagining fucking each other. And like Anita Baker retweeted it and talking about like, love those sands through the hourglass, you know, because like obviously when that aired, that was a big moment, and like a lot of people discovered her song through that. And like it's just so interesting, like seeing the moments, seeing a moment like that from the 90s that like was probably like a huge moment culturally, for the show and for Anita Baker, to think about that now.
Also, that is a naughty song.
It is. Caught Up in the Rapture with you? Come
listen,
on.
I'll get you going to and from. Okay.
Taylor, my God, I mean, to say that you've been a joy is such an understatement. Oh, and we knew you would be. And I mean, again, thanks for the season of TV you gave us. And also just the seasons of TV you're going to give us. You're a fucking star. So.
Oh, thank you. It's been an absolute joy, dream, delight. I mean, imagine leaving someplace that you've been secluded for 80 some days and then listening to your friends in your head and they're actually saying your name. So the last episode when you guys mentioned me, it was surreal to be here. This is really everything. So thank you guys.
Thank you for being you and like truly making this season bearable. I mean,
amazing. Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Like truly when you watch a Big Brother season, you're always worried. Okay. All the black people are going to be out. There's going to be a lot of racism. You're going to be stressed watching it. And honestly, it was like a thriller each week because I was constantly worried that you were going to go. And like, I was like, I'm not watching this week. And then when I find out you're still there, I'm like, well, let me watch these episodes back. So yeah, thank you for being here. Thank you to, I've like also so happy for our Keep It listeners who've been like in my DMs constantly, being in our mentions, being like, when is Taylor coming on the show? When is Taylor coming on the show?
Oh my God.
I'm like, well, you got it.
You got it. And she's never leaving. She's now the permanent third host. She's
Sorry. The audition went well. That's what we'll say. That's what we'll say.
Joseph is shirtless in the kitchen right now. I think I gotta go. Might have to go for a drink, guys. I don't know. I love my life now. It's great. Things are great.
We're so happy for you. And congratulations again on winning America's Favorite Player and the entire game. And thank you so much to Taylor for joining us.
Thanks for having me. You guys are the best.
Wow, that was great. Thank you so much,
God.
Taylor.
What a dream. Thank you, guys. This was like, I was so scared I wouldn't be able to keep up with you guys, but this was just perfect.
No, I would say it's crazy that you don't have a podcast. You're just like so attuned to it, like popping constantly. Love it.
It's fun. I think eventually I might get something going and call it Miss Congeniala T. But we'll see. Yeah. Oh. We'll see what happens.
Okay.
And she knows how to brand. My God.
Okay. Well, I mean, listen, you're already fabulous. We just need to get you armed. So, you
know.
That's
right.
King. I love you. Just don't leave me at the bottom of the ship that goes underwater. No. I stopped the movie at that point because it's too traumatic. I don't like horse fear, you guys. Horse fear is not for me.
We need a Miss Congeniality 3 for you to be in it now. You and Sandy Bullock and Regina. All three.
Oh my God, stop. I would pass out. Scream. Yeah. Have an orgasm, all the things.
Yeah. We'll see you next week for more Keep It, which will also be our 250th episode of Keep It.
Stay exhausted.
Keep It is a Crooked Media production. Our senior producer is Kendra James. Our producer is Chris Lord. Our executive producers are Ira Madison III
and Louis Fertel.
Our editor is Charlotte Landis, and Kyle Seglin is our sound engineer.
Thank you to our digital team, Matt DeGroot, Nara Malkonian, and Delon Villanueva for our production support every week.